All right, we're here in studio with Joan Shelley, and she's brought along some help today. She's not doing solo. She was in town to do a gig the other night at Union Pool, and we're recording this on Valentine's Day morning here, or it might actually be afternoon by this time. So welcome, Joan, and guys, to WFMU.
Thank you.
So, Joan, since you're the star of the show, I'm going to, I guess, direct most of the questions toward you about your early influences, or how did you come to music originally? What was your initial exposure to music? Was it through school or something else?
There's a lot of music growing up, you know, that story. And I was always kind of the performing, singing, youngest child that wanted to dazzle them.
Okay.
So I was writing songs and doing all kinds of singing as soon as I could in school and all that.
So you weren't shy at all?
I was extremely shy, but I did that for my family.
For your family?
Yeah. Little stuff. I had a really, really bad stage fright until maybe I was 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I wrote songs and hung out with little record tape players.
So you were writing songs way back then?
Yeah, I wrote a song when I was 9 on the bus.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's early. So when you said there was a lot of music around, are you talking about in your house? In your family? What kind of stuff were they listening to?
My mom was really big into calypso music for a while. And Van Morrison and the Chieftains were a hit.
A wide range of, well, calypso and Van Morrison is pretty wide. Anything else that sort of stands out that you...
Aretha Franklin, nothing that wasn't really classic, it sounds like now when I think back. But no one was a musician. She liked dancing around and that kind of thing. It's not that interesting now when I say it back.
So other than the music that you had in the house, do you remember the first music that you sort of discovered on your own or you came across and maybe kind of made a big impression
first
on you?
CD I bought, first music I bought was No Doubt, Tragic Kingdom.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I am like the least impressive music history right now.
Yeah, it shows the difference in age because you actually said the first CD that you bought.
Right, I never bought anything before that. It was like a Raffi tape, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it wasn't even, not vinyl or anything like that. That's way before your time. Mm-hmm. Of course, vinyl is making somewhat of a return, but...
It wasn't then, no.
So in school, you studied music or yet you were in a school choir or a chorus or anything like that?
Did all the choirs that were available, pretty much all of it. Some kind of a cappella group in college also, just tried to do it whenever I could and thought I was going to be like a marine biologist, but in the meantime, this is all I did in practice.
Did you get a degree in marine biology?
Anthropology.
In anthropology. Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. So that song that you wrote at 9, what was that about?
I shouldn't have mentioned it. It was called Fight for Our Country. It was really intense for a 9-year-old, and I don't know why. I don't know why or where it comes from, but at age, I lived in Oldham County in Kentucky. There were a lot of kind of farmer kids, and we were just maybe a little more in touch with like the whatever. It's a little bit. It was about like the army and stuff. I don't know where I absorbed that from, but I definitely was a sponge, and I think that's the evidence right there.
I don't know. I was sort of a patriotic kid. My dad was a military guy and a policeman, so I came from that background.
Yeah,
so
did you write any songs about?
No, I was never a songwriter, but
darn.
You know, I'm not
you
a musician.
Could have done an album together.
I can work on that.
Okay.
I can write some military songs and marches and military themes thing.
Okay, I've got like your email. So.
Okay, yeah, let's do that. Let's make sure that happens. So you're originally from Kentucky?
Yes.
So now everybody seems to be moving to Brooklyn in the last couple of years. This is the place to be. Never any urge to leave Kentucky? You're totally happy?
I love leaving in short periods and absorbing that rich culture you get here and
elsewhere.
Yeah. But I don't find that I have the need to plant myself there and haul my groceries around the subway. And I don't know. It's just something about the style.
Wow, that's so
of
much
life
fun,
in
actually.
Kentucky. It is. Oh, good. Well, I'd love to try it out for like a month. I think I could last, but I just never really felt I was a city person.
Well, your music certainly doesn't seem that way. I mean, it's I can hardly imagine. Although there are certainly no shortage of country musicians, bluegrass musicians who live in New York, but the sound of your music is so suffused with the countryside and that kind of life. I think that I guess I'd find it hard to imagine you in some urban setting, but
right, maybe I'd move here and just start making house music. I couldn't help it.
There you go. So what is the music scene like in Louisville?
What is the music scene like?
Is there much, is it sort of small, or are there a lot of people?
It is. You will get to know everybody pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
It is small that way, but there is a lot. No, that's not true. I mean, there's a lot of different scenes. I'm looking around at Glenn and Nathan, who are with me now, because they've been around it for a lot longer, and Nathan definitely has a richer history with that. I didn't really understand what was going on in Louisville until I came back in 2009 from college.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have access to the scene there, and it's got a long history, long tradition of like really great musicians who kind of keep each other in check. Maybe that's the quality thing. It's just been, I don't know. Can you think of Nathan?
Okay, I'll say that this gets asked a lot, I think, of people from Louisville. For some reason, there's been a lot of music that come out of there, and certainly I think kind of above, beyond its we produce more than other cities our size, I think. And I think a lot of it has to do with, there was a really early punk scene there in the late 70s, from about 78 on. And it was fairly self-contained. It was insulated in a lot of ways. There were the shows, people came through, a lot of bands came through on tour, but, you know, come the 80s and 90s, there were bands that were playing, they were purely local, that would bring 500, 800,000 people out.
Oh, wow.
I think that there's a sense in Louisville that we don't really know where we are geographically, kind of half Midwestern, half Southern. It's a very segregated city. It's a very, a lot of neighborhoods are very sort of insulated by class, too, from one another. There's a lot of different scenes there, but I think that in a way, Louisville's very sort of self-serving, by which I mean, you know, sort of self-contained, self-efficient city, and I think it's produced something very local, very specific to the place, and it's great because it put us on the map and it made people really proud in our community, of our community, I think it's why a lot of us either stayed there or moved back there. It's a very supportive and creative place, even though there's a lot of laziness too, but that kind of comes with any sort of middle-sized Midwestern or Southern city.
I mean, certainly Kentucky has a rich tradition of music stretching way back. I mean, some great musicians. John Jacob Niles is from Kentucky.
From Louisville.
From Louisville, right, yeah. So
John Jacob Niles is actually a good example of the Louisville specificity in a way. I mean, he did field recording or field documentation in Appalachia in the 19-teens and 20s, but brought it back to Louisville, where there's not a folk community like there is in the mountains, and made art music out of it.
Right.
And I feel like Louisville is sort of more, we had a really, really vital progressive orchestra in the 1950s and 60s that commissioned all of these new works by contemporary composers, new music composers. There is sort of more of an art scene there than there is a traditional music scene, but we're sort of between West Kentucky and the bluegrass traditions, and East Kentucky and mountain music, and we also had the jug band scene there very early on, ragtime in the late 1800s. Was big there. So it's interesting. It really is kind of a crucible for all this stuff. And the Ohio River and the steamboats probably did a lot, too, to kind of diversify the palette.
Yeah, you had mentioned earlier on about how it seems like a crossroads, sort of crossroads, where it's sort of Midwestern, Southern, and but there's a lot of different traditions. Kentucky seems to be sort of a crossroads, you know. I would think a lot of traditions sort of passing in various directions through there and lending a lot to the music of Kentucky and then obviously back out to the world from Kentucky. there seems to be a lot of creative people. I was looking up other famous musicians from Kentucky, Loretta Lynn, Bill Monroe, Lily Mae Ledford of the Coon Creek Girls, J.D. Crow, the famous bluegrass musician, Merle Travis. So there's some good musicians right there.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, if you go back, way back, pre-war stuff, people whose names are not really known too well today.
Nathan's trying to change that. But, yeah, it's pretty rich, it seems.
Oh, my God, yeah. So you have an album that's late last year, was it? Electric Ursa?
It came out September 2014.
Yeah, now, interestingly enough, that's the first record I knew of yours. Mm-hmm. And one of the most frustrating things as a person who has a radio show is finding out somebody years after they've been recording and saying, how is it possible that I didn't know about this person beforehand? I mean, it doesn't happen all that often, but it happens enough for it to be frustrating.
I would imagine it doesn't happen more often. I feel like there's so much music being made now,
crazy, yeah.
In so many formats that it's hard to know what's out there. I mean,
That's true, but if you think of the people down here, all we do all week is look for stuff, and stuff still goes past us. Finding that one record immediately made me want to go out, and indeed, I bought Ginkgo and the record that you did with Daniel Martin Moore, who I have some of his other stuff as well, and Ben Soli, is that his? He plays on Electric Ursa?
Yeah, he played bass, and cello's his main instrument, but he played bass and was a cheerleader for the whole event.
You needed somebody like that?
Everybody does.
Yeah.
He has a great energy.
Oh, well, that's good. It seems like you record with a fairly tight group of musicians throughout the records. It seems like there's four or five names that keep coming back again and again.
Kevin Raderman, he's recorded, he's engineered them and appeared on the records, mm-hmm. and Dan Dorf and Daniel Martin Moore. It's a talented bunch of people. And
yeah, for sure.
I feel so, it's strange to know them all, I guess. Be like, have those resources available. It's really lucky, and I'll do that as long as I can.
I'm sure they are getting just as much out of the process as you are.
I hope so.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. I could say that even as an outsider, I'm absolutely sure of that. So what are you going to play today? Mostly stuff from Electric Ursa?
We're going to play a couple songs from Electric Ursa and then a few new ones from an upcoming album Nathan and I did just this past month. So some very new stuff, too. That's all right. This first one is called Something Small.
All right. Great. I'm here with Joan Shelley. Whispering
doesn't ask for much. Right?
Yeah.
I hear you. Okay. This one's called Not Over by Half. Standing. called River Low.
I'm here in studio with Joan Shelley. Just heard three songs, the first and the third from her most recent record called Electric Ursa. That's out on No Quarter Records, a smallish label, but I think they just about everything they put out is pretty damn good. So a great little label. This guy, Mike Quinn, is running it. Kudos to him for choosing such great people, including Joan Shelley, my guest today. Joan, you brought a couple of guests down. Who's playing with you today?
I have Nathan Salzberg over here on guitar, and he's also on No Quarter, a solo acoustic guitar record.
A wonderful guitar player.
Yes.
And a singer as well.
Yes. And the singer over here, Glenn Dentinger.
Hey, Glenn. Nice to have you along.
Wonderful Kentucky man.
All right. I noticed that literally every song on Electric Ursa is about leaving, or there's some kind of thread that runs through every single song. There's somebody going away, or it's some about loss, or somebody in transition. Is that it's almost like a song cycle all with this theme of leaving. Is that is why I don't I didn't even know how to ask the question.
Why?
Where are you going, Joan?
Right.
Where are all these people going? That seems
no one's called me out on that yet. And if I were to try to explain it, I think maybe my impulse to write a song comes from that kind of feeling, just in general, right? Like closing the gap of what I don't have in that moment, right? Usually.
I know that some songwriters, I don't know about yourself, but some songwriters start out, and many songwriters actually start out with the song itself. They start playing around on a guitar or piano, whatever it happens to be, and then the song suggests itself. And so is that the way you work also, or do you sometimes sit down and say, oh, I heard about this incident, or I want to write about a friend of mine, or this happened to me, and how does it work for you when you write a song?
The songs that went on my first album, Ginkgo, were more reactions to events and things, like you were saying. Like I would read something, you know, and it really just hits you in the stomach, and then that. But then I've been trying to be more regular about it, so I sit down, and that's how, like, you know, just try to find something that day. So it started to be more like the second thing.
So when you say that day, does that indicate that you're trying to write something every single day just to keep...
Show up every day, at least.
Okay, well, that's great. Not everybody does that. That's... not every songwriter.
Not everybody gets to.
Yeah.
And luckily, I can do that. And then, just try to. I love finding new instruments too. It's got to have a lot of toys around. Because I can't. I mean, it's just exciting to get a new instrument and new sounds to react to. And that usually generates more songs too. So
Instruments other than guitar?
Yeah.
What else do you play?
Play banjo. I was saying, like that.
Oh, banjo, of course, right.
There's this thing called a fun machine made by Baldwin. It's this amazing organ that has beats, has trumpet sounds. It's a little keyboard thing. I love it.
You don't travel with
no,
that.
I don't think one should.
No, it doesn't sound like it. Now, the theme of leave-taking, of course, is a very old tradition in music. I mean, there are so many songs because that was the life that many people led. You think certainly songs related to the sea, and you know that your husband, lover, whatever, is leaving, and they're going to be gone for 3 years, and also people leaving home for work or whatever. Certainly in the 19th century, many songs around the Industrial Revolution are about people leaving and the life changing, and that was a big thing. And then in the 20th century, also that theme was pretty strong in songs. Now, do you feel an affinity? I mean, coming from that part of the world with such a strong rural tradition, do you feel that and the older songs? I mean, do you feel that they filter into your consciousness, or it's more contemporary stuff, the things that are happening in your day-to-day life?
It would be hard to take the credit of, I haven't inherited from my family or someplace some song tradition. I do sing with these two other ladies, Julia Purcell and Cheyenne Mize, in a trio called Maiden Radio. We do old-time music, and that band and that project has exposed me to a lot of really great old song forms and that kind of stuff. But it's also, I guess, resonant. I don't know. I think that impulse to write because of, like, missing someone, or the feeling that you get in your body, is almost animal. Like, it's why, you know, animals moan and miss and chirp and whatever for each other. I think it's a really natural thing that we do, and good songs feel that way. And I think maybe it's in us more than learned sometimes. I suspect it is.
Say that again?
So rather than I heard, you know, a bunch of great ballad singers as a 5-year-old or something, it's just that when I did hear it, that seemed like it rings true.
Oh, right. Something in the human... You seem to talk about a physical thing. Something in the at least in the, if not physical, literally, but something in the human psyche where it's some deep ancient part of of yourself.
Yeah.
Well, of course, it's, you know, we're all connected through time to the earliest singers. So, I mean, physically. So it would only make sense that you'd have, that you can make those connections. I mean, that, I think that's what we're here for, really, in a way. So.
Yeah.
I do want to tell people, you did mention Maiden Radio.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to JoanShelley. .net, which is your website, but then there's also joanshelley.bandcamp.com,
right,
your Bandcamp page, and then you can go to the Maiden Radio, which is a sort of an old-timey sounding trio, and if you if you close your eyes and don't look at the computer in front of you, you're kind of transported back to 1928. I'm not sure if it sounds exactly like old-timey, but there's really, it's almost spooky sometimes how great that sounds. Because there are so many people that try to get that kind of sound of the old-timey stuff and never come close.
That's really kind.
Seriously. And if to get that flavor of 1928 where literally you could, I don't know, that's a gift to me when I hear music like that. So that's amazing.
Thank you.
Any other singers, not these two, other than these two gentlemen in the room, favorite singers, contemporary people that you also maybe have caught on the road, or
we were talking about Bloomington earlier. Joe Connell, who goes by the name Elephant Micah.
Oh wow, yeah,
gorgeous.
Great, wonderful.
Mm-hmm. His voice and his songwriting style have really affected me over the past 4 years. And Kate Long is also a Bloomington lady who
sings. Okay, I don't know
the
her.
Hollows.
Yeah. Oh, the Hollows. Oh,
the Hollows. Yeah. They're wonderful. Doug Paisley, who's on No Quarter, and
oh wow, he's a wonderful songwriter.
So yeah, also the Weather Station.
Oh my God, she's amazing, Tamara Lindemann.
Yeah, so I'd like to just put them all in a room together.
Good luck with that. If you do,
yeah,
give me 24 hours notice. I'll be there.
That's right. That'd be my dream.
Yeah. I've never seen that the Weather Station was playing in New York, but that's one of my fondest wishes, if she'll come to New York. Boy,
yes.
She's amazing. So when you record, do you have everybody sitting in one room all at the same time? It seems almost impossible nowadays to do that. Or do you have a bunch of the people and then add different tracks later on?
On Electric Ursa, we tracked everything in this big room at this place called La La Land, mm-hmm. at Ratterman's studio. Only a few times did I have to sit in time out by myself in isolation. But
because you were bad? You messed something up? Or just because you needed to do a backing vocal or something?
Well, to protect the vocal from bleed from the drums and things like
that. I see. Okay.
But just in case we could get the live takes, and we did, so it's good. Good decision, but I hate that if it's avoidable, which, like you said, is hard.
Yeah, so many people don't do that nowadays.
Right.
It's much more common, I think, to record single tracks or much smaller groups of musicians together. But in the old days, everybody were sitting in the studio and playing all at once. So
yeah, I think
different
there's
sound.
A little school people who believe, or school. Some of us think, it should be a little more organic than a click track, or and something beautiful can come out of that human.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, there's some human dynamic there that you just don't have in the other way. I mean, with digital technology, it gives us so many other choices. It's amazing that we can do things and do kinds of recordings that we just couldn't do before. But to have all those people sitting in a room together and have the emotions sort of bouncing around and looking in each other's eyes and getting cues off one another, you just don't get that any other way. So maybe that's one of the reasons that Electric Ursa sounds so good. But I mean, that is definitely one of my favorite records of last year.
Thank you so much.
So just amazing stuff. The New York Times has a review in Today, that's Saturday, February 14th, of your show the other night at Union Pool. And they, in the headline, it refers to you as a Celtic tinge singer. And of course, there's a connection from old timey and old country music to Celtic music. But
right.
How important is it to you? Or do you feel that connection that strongly? Or is it more the country music or old time music that's more important to you?
Yeah, I think it comes through lots of, I listen to a lot of Irish music also. Yeah, like you said, our mountain ballads, our American, early American music has such that influence. I like the way it sounds to do certain tricks. I guess there's a few kind of little licks I might do vocally. I don't know what you call it. Little moves that sound like that, Celtic in a way, maybe. Yeah, I guess I don't know how to react to it. I'm definitely not Irish.
But you and I had talked early before you started playing about a couple of singers. We'd mentioned Archie Fisher, a great Scottish singer, and we actually mentioned a couple of Scottish singers, Dick Goggin, two of my favorites. And so you obviously are paying some attention to that kind of music.
Yeah, a lot of that I got actually through Nathan Salzberg again.
It's like you should hang out with this guy more
He's
often.
He's good to hang out with. Maybe definitely. People should hang out with. Yeah, I'm spoiled sometimes when I get them to DJ.
It's funny because I find a lot of times it's not the singer-songwriter themselves that's so always looking for music, because it seems like your heads are always working on your next song. And someone in your band is like, oh, you have to hear this. So Nathan seems to provide that, although he's a songwriter in his own right. Mm-hmm. But he has more of that urge to go out and dig through the records and the music.
Certainly. I don't know how somebody has the energy or the memory to do that kind of stuff. It's not something that comes naturally to me at all, and I have to keep those types close. So
yeah, good. Yeah. That sounds good. All right, so let's hear some more music.
All right. Hear more. All right, the song is called Easy Now.
Over the fever will run.
All right, this is the title track, Electric Ursa.
Thanks. Thanks again. We are here in studio with Joan Shelley and guests, and that tune, the title track off her most recent album called Electric Ursa. That the guitar sound on that particular song, the most Celtic to my ears. It'll definitely sound like something Turlough O'Carolan could have written, maybe. Some real old-sounding Celtic thing going on there from Nathan Salzberg. So definitely someone who has bought a few Irish and Scottish records in his time, I'm sure. I wanted to ask about the process of putting the album together, the which track comes, the sequencing. Mm-hmm. And it always seems, it always strikes me as a fascinating thing is why someone picks the first song, why something is the last. Is it for this particular record, was it especially easy to do that, or was it that certain things stand out? Oh, this has to be the first song, this has to be the last song, or did it all, or is it not, or wasn't it that important, the sequencing?
Well, I think sequencing is really important. I'm trying to recall how it happened. I know Nathan, you had a go at it. Kevin did some. But this one wasn't too difficult. The hard part was kind of weeding out the songs.
You had a lot more.
Yeah, we took a lot off of the album, but and then everything kind of, we knew where it was going to go. You know, you just listen to it, and what do you want to feel now? And then do that.
Now, it's not a super long album. When you say cut the songs off, do you just felt like they weren't as strong, or they didn't belong on the record?
Didn't belong
with the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
I talked earlier, I was going to put you on the spot about all the songs being about leaving, or do you feel like this is a time of transition for you? Do you feel a certain thing in yourself, in your life, that this is a certain time of you're moving in a different direction, or you're moving more strongly in a certain direction?
Sure. And
more than
I guess I kind of I really hope that a lot, like, we're always doing that, you know.
It doesn't always work that way.
And I don't know. Certainly, lots of changes.
Mm-hmm.
I won't go into details.
No. But please, it's not. That's not required to be for part of the interview. But I just
I did bring my diary though. We're going to go through those soon.
Okay. Right, and yeah. Definitely. You're not leaving until we've read through that a couple of times. Yeah, it just seems such a strong theme through the album that it was fascinating to me.
Hmm.
Now, your style of singing it harkens back so much to the old style of singing, not only of Scots-Irish, but of, you know, the mountain music that you from the area that you come from and throughout the southern mountains.
Hmm.
And I find that there's such a premium now today in singing with sort of over the top and adding extra this and extra that to singing. And I think one of the things that makes your singing so powerful is because you have the soulfulness is coming through, the emotion is coming through, but you have this restraint in the way you're singing, which reminds me of those great old singers. And, you know, and some of them, of course, are still with us, but I'm thinking of some of the classic old singers from 40s, 50s, and even the pre-war stuff. Now, for you, can you say that, does that seem like just natural to you? That's the way you like to sing? Or did some of that influence of those singers creep in and say, oh, wow, I want to sing that way. That makes the most sense to me.
It definitely wasn't always there. There was a period of my life where my parents were really worried. I figured out vibrato, and I just wouldn't sing without doing it. It was a constant thing. And they're like, I hope she grows out of that one. It's kind of annoying. But, yeah, it was... I don't know how I figured it out, but eventually I knew that, like, you had to just take away things. Like, the more you could... That stuff that's pretty and flourishes and things get in the way between you and the... your listener, whoever you're trying to communicate with, and even in language, like, I wish I could just say fewer words to you right now to say the thing I think, and that's the process that I think I'm going to try to keep doing that.
Yeah, I have the same thing, as I always tend to sort of add too many words and get myself mixed up in the process, but for a songwriter, of course, you have to, I guess, eliminate is just as powerful an urge as well as adding. I mean, you have to take away stuff. I mean, when you write songs, how much of editing do you have to do? I mean, do the songs, like, are there extra lines, extra verses, say, oh, this doesn't belong, that doesn't belong? Or do you more or less kind of get it and then just tinker with it?
It varies from song to song, but usually I try to look, if I have like five verses, I know I'm not going to use all those. I could maybe start liking to do that more. I think people should have a longer attention span, but also I know that the feeling I have didn't need to be that descriptive, probably.
Yeah.
So then you try to get 3 out of 5 or something.
Three out of five ain't bad. Well, we spent the last hour or so with Joan Shelley and guests, Nathan Salzberg, Glenn Dettinger. Thank you so much for coming down here today and gracing us with your beautiful music.
Thank you so much.
All right.
It's been a pleasure.
All right. Thank you.